Hello, and welcome to episode 104 of Modiga Människor, or in English, Brave People. With me, I have Linda Wharton from New Zealand. Before I introduce her, I want to thank you all for your support for this channel. And I just want to say this channel is... the channel's surviving. It really depends on you keep sharing the shows and so on. Now I want to say hello to you, Linda.
Hello, Zoya. Good morning from New Zealand. Good evening to you and good morning here.
It's totally opposite, but. Yeah. There you are, and I mean, I'm so glad that you are with us, and I did a short introduction in the text, but I would like you to introduce yourself. I mean, you've been in the healthcare business for quite a long time.
Yeah. So first of all, I just want to say thank you, Zoe, for reaching out to New Zealand. Little old New Zealand on the other side of the world. Thank you for giving us a platform and a voice to the world. I appreciate it. Yeah, so my background is I've really had two parallel careers. For 37 years, I have been a full-time registered acupuncturist and naturopath in my own holistic health practice, specializing in holistic women's health. And throughout those years, I've also had a parallel career as a health researcher and a writer. And so my medium of communication has been popular literature. It's been newspapers and magazines. And I've enjoyed the process of translating more complex aspects of healthcare, science, research into simple speak, you know, for women's magazines and broad reach newspapers. So that was my parallel career, which I loved. And then would you like me to talk a little bit about how I started, you know, why I'm here talking to you, okay. So because of that job in healthcare, and especially the research and the writing, I was following the rollout of the COVID vaccines around the world with a lot of interest, and the whole world has basically been, much of the world has been ahead of New Zealand. So by the time the COVID vaccines came to New Zealand, some countries, America, some parts of Europe, UK, were 6 months or more ahead of us. And so there was by then a body of data to look at in terms of not only efficacy, but safety. So I was looking at that, focusing partly on the safety and looking at the international adverse reaction databases. And I began to become quite concerned about what I was seeing. It looked very different to anything I'd seen before in terms of, you know, normal childhood schedule vaccines or flu vaccines. And so because I'm a writer, I decided that I would set up a Facebook group just to give myself a platform to talk about it, to ask questions, because literally nobody was in New Zealand. Nobody was asking questions. It was just a given that the vaccines were coming, that we would all have one, and that they were safe and effective. It was a given in the popular consciousness, largely because this is what we were being told in a very focused, organized way on all of our media platforms, that the COVID vaccines are safe and effective. That's the mantra here, everything safe and effective. So what I was seeing did not tally with what I was hearing through the mainstream media and the 6 o'clock news and the government updates. So I decided to start a Facebook group. I called it the Health Forum NZ. And I honestly anticipated that it would be a very sleepy little corner of Facebook where, you know, maybe I'd attract some doctors, some scientists, some other interested citizens to ask questions and discuss the science we were seeing and the evidence from overseas. So what actually happened was 3 weeks ago, Facebook took that group down. It had been there for, I think, 11 months, and we had 60,000 members, which was not at all what I anticipated or planned for. So we had 60,000 members, probably about 52 to 54,000 of those were Kiwis. And then we had other members from around the world who were interested in what was happening here. So that's how I moved into this whole terrifying sphere of daring to have a voice, to ask questions contrary to the media and the government propaganda. Hmm. And that's why I'm here talking to you today.
Yeah. Hmm. And they, I mean, like you said, they just took the group down. Yeah.
They took the group down. We knew it was going to come one day. And many of my friends who are doing similar work in different ways in the freedom movement in New Zealand, they would message me and they say, how come you're still there? How come you've got 50,000, 55,000, you're still on Facebook? Because there's been a pattern all the way through. When our freedom groups in New Zealand, when they start to grow exponentially, they're just removed. They, you know, it's like, the founder of the group becomes too influential, our voices go too far, and they just remove us. So prior to being removed, I had gone over the months from, you know, a 24-hour ban for saying something, then a three-day ban, and then they shot up to 30-day bans. And I had multiple 30-day bans where my group admins would post for me. I would still do all the writing and they would just post for me. Mm. And the last two 30-day bans I had were both for publishing peer-reviewed science papers in reputable journals. And they were both looking at the correlation between nutritional status and your risk of contracting COVID or ending up in hospital or dying. I think one was zinc and the other one was vitamin D. And so both posts were removed by Facebook and I got a 30-day ban for each of them for linking to the science journal. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, if someone still think that we live in a democracy, so
the censorship is completely rampant. I was also filmed. No, it wasn't a film. I did two radio interviews for a community radio station here in New Zealand in the last year, and I talked about the things that we're talking about now, and both of those were posted on the community radio station platform and also on YouTube, and they were both removed from YouTube very quickly. Within 24, 48 hours, they were censored and removed from YouTube. Mm. Yeah.
I mean, because you can clearly see that we hardly get anything. I mean, in Sweden, I don't hear anything about New Zealand. No.
It's interesting because we have heard quite a bit about Sweden in our, you know, in our national newspapers. Mm. Not so much for a little while, but you know, when you were going against the narrative here was that you were the outlier. You know, you were going against the world. You weren't locking down and mandating masks and doing all the stuff that the rest of us have done. And the narrative here was, you know, watch the space. It's going to be complete carnage in Sweden. There's going to be millions of them killed because they're not doing what we're doing and what the rest of the world are doing. So that was the sort of narrative that brought Sweden into our mainstream media. But we haven't heard about you for quite a while now because it wasn't carnage and millions of you didn't die. So
no,
you know, no longer newsworthy.
But can you tell us about this 23 days outside the parliament?
Yeah, so it's been a huge month in New Zealand for many, many people who have been affected by legal COVID restrictions in New Zealand, which we can talk about, and all of the freedom groups. There are a lot of us in New Zealand. Yeah. And so we'll come back to the background of what took us to Wellington. But in February, it must have been February, we did the New Zealand version of the Canadian Truckers Convoy. And so we gathered, I was not an organizer. I promoted, you know, the project on my social media platforms, but I wasn't an organizer. So I say we as in the freedom movement. We created our own convoy, which came from all around New Zealand. We don't have enough big trucks in New Zealand. So we had some trucks, we had buses, camper vans, cars, people were on motorbikes, anything that you could move on. And we all gathered, came from all around New Zealand, long road trips. We gathered at the grounds, the public grounds, the grass in front of Parliament. In New Zealand, we call that the beehive because our Parliament building literally looks like a beehive. And this is in Wellington. And this space belongs to the people. The grounds, beautiful grounds, belong to the people. You're allowed to, you know, move through, sit there, have your lunch. And over the years, Parliament grounds have been the site of many sit-in protests, sit-in and live-in protests. So we gathered there and tents were erected. And the reason we were there was because we wanted somebody from the government to come out and speak with us about the pain of the people, the concerns of real-life New Zealanders that were hurting. These were the people that were gathered now on the ground in front of Parliament. Mm. And so we called out for the Prime Minister or the COVID Minister or an MP, just somebody from the government to come and speak with us. And in particular, we wanted to speak about vaccine injury. There were many vaccine injured people there. And we wanted to speak about employment mandates because many of the people that had gathered were there because they no longer had a job. They were able to camp in for however long it took to get the attention of the government because we've had very, very wide reaching mandates, which we can go into. But so there we were. And we didn't know how long we were going to be there for. We had a very strict code of conduct, no drugs, no alcohol, no violence, no abuse of any sort at all. And this was adhered to. If there was any sign of trouble, people were moved on. And quite frankly, there was no sign of trouble. This was amazing. I was only there for 5 days. Many of my friends stayed for the entire 23 days. It was beautiful. It was the most peaceful, loving, compassionate, united microcosm of what makes up New Zealand. We had every nationality, Māori, Pacifica, Chinese, Europeans, and everything else there. We had many professionals because many of the professionals are the people that have been mandated out of work. So we had nurses, midwives, doctors, psychiatrists, psychologists, holistic health practitioners, mandated out military, mandated out police, managed isolation workers, border workers, aged care workers. So everything. Plus we had, you know, people who were unemployed anyway, you know, people who worked in shops, stay-at-home mums, just so you couldn't characterise really who was there other than to say they were people that had been harmed by our COVID response in New Zealand, or they were people that hadn't been harmed. Maybe they were double vaccinated themselves, but they cared about, they were pro-choice people. They cared that we, the unvaccinated people, did not have the free will and the free choice to choose to be unvaccinated without paying a massive price for our choice. So the pro-choice people were there as well. So this went on for 23 days. It was overwhelmingly Kiwi. In New Zealand, we've got this thing, you know, we're a new nation, we're still very connected to our pioneer stock, you know, where they literally landed here and there was nothing here except Indigenous people, Māori. And they started from scratch. So that was only a couple of hundred years ago. So we're very linked to that still. So we've got this thing here about we can do anything with number eight wire, fencing wire. And Parliament Village was the most wonderful evidence of that, because within days it was a streamlined operation. We had very early on, we had a massive weather event, like a cyclone came with floods all over New Zealand, floods in Wellington, huge gale force winds, and they knew this was coming. And Parliament and the media were thinking, yeah, woohoo, this is going to get rid of them all, they're all going to go. But it didn't. They battened down the hatches, the tents stayed, it was flooded, and so then they brought farmers in. Farmers turned up with dozens and dozens of huge bales of hay that was, you know, put all around the camp. And then Trevor Mallard, the Speaker of the House, decided that the next best way of getting rid of us was to start activating the sprinkler system, which was all over the lawn of Parliament where all the tents were. And so they started then running the sprinklers. Just every night they turned the sprinklers on, and so there was just water going everywhere. So then a whole bunch of plumbers turned up to help us for free. And they put irrigation systems in, and they plumbed it so that all this water was run off into trenches and then into pipes. And I don't know what they did. They set it all up so that all the water was going down channels on the concrete and away instead of flooding the tents. So that was incredible. We had Hare Krishna came and set up huge food tents with vegan food, and they were feeding every single person that was there, thousands of people, three meals a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. They had huge volunteer squads. It was like a military operation. We had health tents. We had incredible staff in the health tents, because, of course, they weren't working. They were staff that had decided not to have the vaccine to keep their hospital jobs. The lead of the acute care tent was an ICU nurse with 30 years experience. They had doctors in there. We had the early childhood education tent, where they had mandated out teachers that were looking after the young ones and teaching them and singing with them and writing with them. That was all happening. We had lots of healing tents with people giving massages or Reiki or whatever you like. And then, of course, we had the health forum tent. So that was our tent. That was a tent representing vaccine injured in New Zealand. And we were there for the whole of the 3 weeks, and we spoke to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of not only people that were there for the protest, but on the weekends, many just members of the public would come to the village to check it out. You know, what is this? Is it really what they say it is in the media? And so those people were coming, and many of them had no idea what was happening to New Zealanders with vaccine injury. So it was an incredible thing. We also had we had portaloos brought to site. They were emptied daily. Then we progressed from portaloos. We had builders who were on site, builders proper toilet blocks down on the road to service the, you know, the people that were there. And then about 3 days before the protest ended so badly, we actually had mobile shower units that were moved onto site as well, with about four different showers that were cleaned multiple times a day. It was really sophisticated. It was really, really amazing. So that was the real life experience of being there. Oh, and we had a huge stage. And so all day long we would have speakers, freedom speakers, vaccine injured sharing their stories, mandated out sharing their stories, many musicians, so we'd have bands playing. It was kind of like a festival, a very loving drug-free festival, but with a message as well. And then it got to the point at the 23-day mark where government and the police presumably realised that we had staying power. Rather than the numbers dwindling and, you know, tents packing down and people taking off, we were just growing. We were getting bigger. We were taking more street area over. We took over the grounds of the church next door with tents. You know, when the permanent toilet block went up and the mobile showers arrived, I think they thought, hang on a minute, how are we going to get rid of this lot? Still nobody from the government had come to speak to anybody. And then on March the 2nd, there had been sort of Chinese whispers the night before on social media about something's going to happen, something's going to happen. Be careful, be aware. And then about, I wasn't there, so I watched this all on live stream from my home. I live about 9 hours drive from Wellington. I'm in Auckland at the other end of the North Island. And so at about 6 o'clock in the morning, while everybody was still sleeping, except for the security teams that stayed awake all night on the perimeters of the village, 350 police were bussed into Wellington. I think they were bussed in the night before, but they hit the streets and they basically surrounded the village. And they started an operation of towing the vehicles. And they were dressed in riot gear with those big, long Perspex shields and, you know, protective gear on. And they started, of course, the people woke up. Everybody woke up and came to the streets, came to the borders of the village. And they started, the police started forming long lines and advancing against the people to try and clear them, to clear the concrete bollards, to clear the vehicles. And for the longest time, this went on for hours and hours throughout the day. And for the longest time, the protesters were completely peaceful. In fact, the front line that the police were up against, much of the time they turned, the protesters turned their backs. So they had the backs to the police to show that there was no aggression. You know, they weren't advancing on the police. They were all linked together, men and women. There were some heroic women standing in the front lines as well. And this just continued for hours. And then basically things escalated. The police escalated things with pepper spray and I think tear gas as well, but definitely pepper spray. And then things just, the emotional temperature of the event just escalated. By late in the afternoon, there were people, there were protesters there that nobody had seen for the entire 3 weeks, people wearing strange clothing and goggles and fully masked, unrecognizable, who were ramping things up, throwing bricks and doing things that nobody else had done. So that then gave, you know, the police force permission to ramp up the violence as well. So many protesters got injured, many people went to hospital, eye gouging, serious bruising, broken sternums, broken ribs, eye damage from pepper spray. Many people were arrested, and then a fire started in the tents. I still have not seen the evidence of exactly how that fire started and who started that fire. Let's just say a fire started in the tents and it took off. So a lot of property, you know, got damaged. By that time, everybody was just moved off site. The protesters started moving away. Hundreds of police came on site and they just systematically worked through the village, destroying everything, they destroyed, literally smashed up, you know, the shower block, the toilets. Everybody's tents and personal belongings were just pulled out of the ground and moved into a great big pile, which was then all removed, I think the next day, to a rubbish dump, basically. Nobody got anything back. We lost the health forum tent, which was a big tent, and we had a generator there, and we had a huge speaker and a microphone, which had been gifted to us by a health forum member. Amazingly, somebody ran onto the site and took those away. So we got those back. We didn't get the generator back. The tent was burned. But the most precious thing that we lost was we had 40 really big signs, beautifully produced, and each one of those signs was the personal story of 40 seriously injured, COVID vaccine injured New Zealanders. So those signs were treated with great reverence because it took a lot of courage for those people to have their faces, their names, and their stories on signs, which were carried around Wellington every day. We had volunteers who did a procession up the main street of Wellington every day with the signs for shoppers and people to see. Well, all of those signs went up in flames. So we've had them reprinted. They arrived 2 days ago. We've got them again. But just the emotional, you know, imagery of that and the significance of all of those people who they're shunned. Nobody wants to know their story, and then their story went up in flames as well.
Yeah, I mean, it really makes me sad listening to this. I mean, first to describing this, the first, I mean, 23 days and that people really can do magic things together. And that's a threat.
Yeah. And I think it's taken on significance in so many ways for all of us that were there. The societal situation in New Zealand that prompted us to take this extreme measure of camping for 3 weeks on the grounds of Parliament, in the face of threats, in the face of a huge police presence. All day long, we had police photographers with huge long-range cameras photographing all of us, you know, facial recognition. Cameras went up on buildings around us, pointing down, so everything was being filmed. What prompted us to go there was the despair that so many of us have felt and the pain that we are living through with the massive division in our society. We used to be a very peaceful, very unified society in New Zealand. And our Kiwi culture, you know, we're one of the friendliest people in the world. If you see somebody in trouble on the side of the road, somebody will stop within seconds and help you. You know, it's like, she'll be right, mate. You're right, mate. You know, what can I do? Do you need a ride? Do you need my cell phone? That's how we are. It's a beautiful thing about New Zealand. Unfortunately, by the time we took the radical action of camping in at Parliament, we were a broken society. And what has broken us is the misinformation and the propaganda around vaccine, around COVID vaccination. It has divided our society like you would not believe. So we have become the majority who are vaccinated, who wear masks, who are currently lining up for their booster, which is shot number 3, who believe that, you know, if you get COVID, you're about to drop dead, you know, that it's like the bubonic plague, and that you must be vaccinated to keep the vulnerable safe, to keep the elderly safe, that it's a societal responsibility. So there's those people, and they make up the bulk of New Zealand. And then there's a small number New Zealand tells us it's around 150,000 of us left that are eligible for vaccination, but it's actually much bigger than that because of the way they work the stats out. Those of us who are unvaccinated believe we've probably got upward of 400,000 still unvaccinated. Mm. So there's us, and we are the modern day lepers. We literally are the modern day lepers. So through making our choice not to be vaccinated, many people have lost their careers. They've been mandated out of, there were very wide sweeping government mandates that covered about 40% of our workforce. And then private employers also had the legal right to bring in workplace mandates, and many of them did that. So I would say over 50% of New Zealand jobs were covered by vaccine mandates. So there are a lot of people who lost their jobs through deciding not to have the vaccine. And so who were these people? The vast majority of these people were highly educated, very well researched professionals, many of them medical professionals, right? Hello, here we are in a pandemic that's going to kill us all. What do? We mandate out our most precious people, our surgeons, our doctors, our midwives, you name it, mandated out. Mm-hmm. So these people who once were revered as our, you know, our heroes, our medical professionals, and they were going to save us with COVID, they became part of what we've been referred to in New Zealand. We're referred to as the river of filth. That's how we were referred to by the Speaker of the House at Parliament, the same guy that turned the sprinklers on, referred to us as the river of filth. And so this included our doctors. I had personal contact with an orthopedic surgeon who spent his life giving mobility back to children. After a 30-year career, he walked away rather than have the vaccine because he'd done hundreds, if not thousands, of hours of research, you know. So we had this massive, we've got this massive schism. People have lost jobs. We've all lost friends. I've lost friends. We've all lost family members. I've lost family members who won't speak with me, who think I'm doing the devil's work by questioning the narrative, by speaking about the vaccine injured. So we have deep heart wounds that, even though on the 4th of April our vaccine passport system is being dismantled and many of our workplace mandates are coming down, we won't forget. You can't just paper this over as if nothing's happened and expect us to just, you know, pick up where we were. We're fundamentally changed as a people now. And so this announcement was made, I don't know, 10 days ago, 12 days ago, about the vaccine pass system is coming down. So that's the other thing. We've had the workplace mandates and we've had a passport system. So if you didn't have a vaccine passport, which is a digital thing, then you were locked out of your life. So I'm unvaccinated. I'm proudly unvaccinated based on the science and the evidence and the lack of long-term safety data. That's why I've made my decision. Proudly unvaccinated. I will never receive a COVID vaccine, irrespective of what the personal cost is to me in terms of being locked out of my life, because I've always trusted that I would make it through COVID, but I don't trust what we're going to find out 6 months, 1 year, 18 months from now about the genetic, you know, interventions that we're currently experiencing. So I didn't have a passport. So what did that mean for me here in New Zealand? Well, it meant that I couldn't go in any cafes or restaurants. I couldn't even sit outside them. So I couldn't sit on outdoor tables. I couldn't go to theatres, cinemas, community halls. I couldn't go in any indoor space owned by a council a government council anywhere in New Zealand. So I couldn't go in libraries, community halls, gyms, swimming pools. The easiest thing to say is to tell you where I could go. Surprisingly, I could go to a shopping mall. So the uncleans were allowed to go to the shopping malls. I could go to a pharmacy and I could go to a supermarket. And that was it. That was it. If I had a school-aged child, I couldn't even go walk across the school field, staying outside to drop my child at the building. I had to, I don't have school-aged children, but I've got friends. I had to stand outside the perimeter of the whole property and send their child on their own. You couldn't sit a driver's license. So we had many teenagers who were about to sit their driver's license. They weren't allowed to get in a car. If they were unvaccinated, with a driving instructor. So life changed significantly for the unvaccinated. Many of us lost our jobs. Many of us were unable to pay mortgages. And so people were doing things like putting tenants in their house while their entire family moved to go live in the basement of their parents' house. Some people were living in tents. Suicide has skyrocketed. Mental health is unimaginably bad. Like, I've never seen anything like it in New Zealand. So in many ways, we're a broken people. And those of us who decided not to vaccinate based on two things. One, based on personal research, intelligent research and science. And the second thing that a lot of New Zealanders don't understand is that many of the people who have been mandated out of their jobs or who didn't get a vaccine passport, they were people who started out by doing the right thing. They lined up for shot number one. Maybe they lined up for shot number two. And on one of those doses, they had a very serious adverse reaction. So our system in New Zealand has been that, say I have dose number one and say I get myocarditis and I'm hospitalized and I'm very ill for months. What I have to do is I have to apply to my doctor for a medical exemption. There's no guarantee my doctor will give this to me. If my doctor does give it to me, it then has to go to our Ministry of Health, to a panel or a board. And this board reads the exemption and then makes the decision whether I can have a medical exemption or whether I need to have a second dose, irrespective of what happened with the first. So many of the people who have lost their jobs and don't have a vaccine passport, they're not anti-vaxxers. They're people who have been damaged by dose one or dose two and have been unable to get a medical exemption. And so they've decided they're not going to risk dying of heart failure with dose number two. And so they don't get their vaccine pass. So they're shunned, locked out of society, and they have to leave their mandated job. And this happens over and over and over and over again in New Zealand. I put a call out recently for people to send me their stories about being mandated out of their jobs and medical exemptions being declined. And in 48 hours, I got 2,000 New Zealanders wrote to me, 2,000 stories. And they are shocking. I mean, most Kiwis have got no idea that this is happening. If you haven't got a vaccine pass, you're just a selfish anti-vaxxer. Never mind that you nearly died from dose number one. You know, we have people here who, I know three people personally who had serious anaphylactic reactions to dose number one. They were hospitalized and they were unable to get a medical exemption for their next dose. What they're told here is you need to book an appointment with an immunologist. You have the vaccine done in ED, emergency department, with a high needs team and a crash cart. That's how you have your subsequent doses if you nearly died from dose one. If you don't do that, you don't get the vaccine passport and you get mandated out of your job and you become part of the river of filth. Even if previously you were a heart surgeon or an orthopedic surgeon or a midwife, you are the leper. Mm-hmm. And that's what we've lived through in New Zealand. And so our society is so broken.
Mm. Oh, it breaks my heart to listen to this. I mean, it's just, and then you told me earlier about the vaccine injured who went to the parliament the other day, and they couldn't even handle over what.
Yes. So that's the other thing that's happened. Yes, sorry. So just a few days ago, 5 days ago, I think it was this week anyway, I think it was on Monday or Tuesday, a group of 200 people travelled from around New Zealand back to Wellington. Over 100 of those people were vaccine injured, and then they had support people with them as well. We had people in wheelchairs, people with walking sticks, many people with heart damage, people who had had strokes. They were all wearing red and white t-shirts, and a new organization in New Zealand called Silent No More had organized a memorial service in Wellington for them and for those that we've lost through to death after the COVID vaccine in New Zealand. So they had a beautiful memorial service, and then they moved from there to Parliament. Now, they had a petition asking for recognition of vaccine injured and reparation. And the petition had only been going 4 days and they had 12,000 signatures. So they'd done really well in 4 days.
Mm.
And so they moved to the grounds of, well, the intention was that they were going to go up into the grounds of Parliament, and an MP had agreed to come out from Parliament and meet them to receive the petition. What happened was they turned up to go into the Parliament grounds and they were met with police that refused them entry, that kept them down on the public space, the road frontage, the roadside. And the MP came down through the grounds, down the steps to the roadside and received the petition from them on the roadside. And the whole time they were there, there were two police photographers with massive long-range cameras photographing all of the people that were gathered, all of the vaccine injured. So it was confrontational, not on the part of, they weren't protesters, they were injured people. They were not confrontational, but they were met with a very confrontational stance by the police.
Hmm. And this is the world we are living in right now.
Yeah.
I mean,
and it's not just New Zealand, right?
No, I'm telling no, this story, no. But
it could be anywhere I'm talking about.
And yeah, it's just getting worse and worse. And I mean, we need to lift this up.
That's what you're doing. You're doing a great. Yeah. You know, alternative media is our only hope.
Yeah.
That's the other division in amongst our people. The people that have chosen to be either chosen or acquiesced to be double vaxxed and now boosted, and they wear masks. Most of those people, their sole news sources are mainstream media. So they watch our television news, they listen to our radio news, and they read the newspaper. And so their perception of the world they're living in, and in particular their perception of, let's use that word psyops, right? It sounds like it's a real tinfoil hat word, but it's psychological operations. That's what we've lived through in New Zealand for the last year since the COVID vaccines arrived. We still have newspapers and government-funded advertisements on channels telling us that if we have a COVID vaccine, we're doing it to protect other people.
Mm.
They're still teaching people that here, even at the same time as then in amongst all that, our mandates and our passports are being dismantled because not only are the vaccines not protecting vulnerable people from infection by unvaccinated people, but our double vaccinated people have almost twice the incidence of Omicron as our unvaccinated in New Zealand. I actually wrote the stats down. Are you interested in hearing?
Yes.
So the unvaccinated are still walking around being denied access to grandchildren, and for two more days we can't go in cafes. It all comes down on the 4th of April. So I thought I'll just go on and I'll look at the government stats about what's actually happening. So ready to talk to you. So this is the vaccine status of new cases in New Zealand as of yesterday. And they're all per 100,000 stats. So we're comparing apples with apples, irrespective of the population size, you know, of any subgroup of vaccination. So I love the per 100 stats because we really get a clear picture what it looks like. So currently in New Zealand, per 100,000, we have 160 unvaccinated people per 100,000 with COVID. The boosted people, right, the best of the best of the best, the boosted, they're double jabbed and boosted, we have 234 cases boosted per 100,000, 160 cases unvaccinated. The fully vaccinated, that's the double jab but not boosted, we have 338 cases per 100,000. Compare that with 160 cases per 100,000 for the unvaccinated. So they are still going around with the media messaging that we, the unvaccinated, are a danger to the boosted and the vaccinated. The Herald, our main media publication, just a week or so ago, is saying you are 12 times more likely to be infected by an unvaccinated person than a fully vaccinated person. And then you've got those stats. And then even when you look at hospitalization, people say, oh, well, okay, you know, yes, never mind about cases. That's not what counts. It's the hospitalization that's important. So I looked at that too. So we do have the greatest number per 100,000 hospitalized are unvaccinated, but we're talking about 4.3 people per 100,000 unvaccinated. And partially vaccinated, people that have had one dose, they're much more likely to end up in hospital, 5.1 people per 100,000. And fully vaccinated are just slightly below the unvaccinated. So that's 3.1 people in hospital who are double jabbed versus 4.3 for unvaccinated. So the gap, the hospitalization gap between fully vaccinated and unvaccinated is closing, which is what we see everywhere. We've seen that in UK, we've seen that in Israel, and then it flips the other way. So there's negative efficacy for the fully vaccinated, and they're much more likely to be hospitalized than the unvaccinated. So we're sliding towards that with our stats here in New Zealand now. Yeah.
You told me about Australia, that very recently they started to I think it's mandated from 0 to 4 years zero old now four.
So that's been going through this week, and I have to say I've been so busy dealing with New Zealand stuff I haven't delved into that, just things that have come across my desk and I've read them. Part of the Australian Senate, I couldn't tell you which party, put forward the desire for 0 to 4 year olds to be mandated for COVID jabs, and then another part of the House opposed it. But then yesterday, the opposition lost the vote, and so the vote has been won for mandating birth to 4 year olds. With the COVID vaccine. So obviously they don't have jobs. They can't be mandated out of a job. But and I haven't looked at the backstory as to what that means, but with other childhood schedule vaccines that are mandated in Australia, what it means is they can't access social welfare support, like parents won't be able to access benefits or social welfare support if their baby is not COVID vaccinated. And they can't access any kind of daycare or preschool education or early childhood service, you know, services. So yeah, that's what's coming there. There hasn't been talk about that here yet. So far, our children under the age of 12 are not mandated in New Zealand in terms of not being governed by vaccine passports. So if you have an unvaccinated five-year-old here, they can still move freely. But 12 and above, they have to have a passport.
And from the 4th of April, you will be able to.
Yes. So from the 4th of April, the vaccine passport system is being removed. However, as are the mandates for large sectors, however, healthcare is still going to be mandated. And so all of those doctors and nurses and specialists and surgeons can't go back to their jobs. They're still mandated out. And aged care, the aged care sector is still mandated. And border workers and MIQ, which is our managed isolation facilities, they're all still mandated. But it's very complicated because the sectors where they have removed the mandates, teachers, military, police, etc., they're removing those mandates. Early childhood education removed. But what our government has done is they've muddied the water by telling private employers that they are free to choose to instigate their own vaccine mandates in the workplace. So while the government is taking the governmental mandates off, employers are now faced with doing a health and safety review and deciding where are they most vulnerable legally. Are they most vulnerable to being attacked legally and being sued if they instill a private mandate in the workplace and discriminate against the Bill of Rights and the human rights of the unvaccinated? Or are they more likely to get legal cases brought against them by imposing, did I just say that, the opposite? So where are they most at risk, by having mandates or not having mandates? And so our government, what they're saying now is they're coming out and they're saying, it's up to the workplace. If you want to have a mandate, bring one in. That's fine. But we recommend that you get very good legal advice. Mm-hmm. So what they've done is they've taken away any prospect of legal challenge to the government over the mandates, and they've moved the liability and the risk across to private employers and workplaces. Mm. It's very clear what's happened there. And so they've moved the expense of litigation across to private employers as well. Yes, so we're still very much a society in transit. Even as vaccine passports come down, we've had quite a few stories in the media this last week, and lots of discussion on social media. Excuse me a minute. I'm recovering, or I'm just a month recovered from COVID, and I've still got the a humbug. So there's a lot of terror in the community, ironically, in the double vaccinated and the boosted and the mask wearing. They're very frightened that the unvaccinated can now start moving freely in our society. There's big, you know, hundreds of comments on social media. They're saying things like, well, I won't be going out now. I'll stop going to restaurants if they're going to be unvaccinated people there, which kind of begs the question, what do they actually believe their vaccine is doing for them? If you're double vaccinated and boosted and you can't be in the same building as an unvaccinated person, I don't understand that. Mm. Why are you vaccinated? You know, so there's a whole new narrative that's going on now around the danger that we pose moving freely in society. So the division is still there, even when our vaccine passports are gone. And we had a big announcement a couple of weeks ago in New Zealand. That's when this was announced, that the mandates were coming down, the passports were going away. But the languaging around it, it's been made very clear. This is literally the languaging. We're keeping the mandates and the passports in our back pockets for when they're needed again. So it's a temporary reprieve because the unvaccinated natives have got very restless and done things like camp at Parliament for 3 weeks. And because, as I read you the data, you cannot have a situation, mandates and passports based on the narrative that the unvaccinated are the ones getting COVID and infecting everybody, when the stats say the opposite. So, you know, the premise that was the rationale for all of that discriminatory infrastructure, the stats completely refute it now. So they have to take it down. But it's, if a new variant comes, if cases take off, then we can just go like that and bring it all back in overnight. So all of these people that lost their jobs, if they can go, they've also been told they can't get their old jobs back. So they're just on the workforce looking for a job. But then should a new variant come in and our cases start to rise, we've been told to expect passports and mandates back. So potentially these same people could once again lose their jobs.
Mm.
Oh, that's the other thing that unvaccinated people have not been able to do. They haven't been able to access education in anything above school level. So they haven't been able to go to university or tertiary institutions.
But there are no people like asking for, I just had this picture of that, the want unvaccinated people to have like a mark or something, so they
I know. I mean, that's the next step, right? When nobody's been
because people are getting angry for you people being able to move around. I mean,
yeah, well, I mean, the mark in New Zealand was a mark that was hidden until you had to bring it out, and that was your vaccine passport.
This is so just so terrible. And you also told about the doctors who went there. They lost their medical license.
Yeah. So we've got a very small, exceedingly brave sub-faction of doctors in New Zealand who share the same concerns as I do around the safety, and now we have more data around the efficacy of the jabs. And they've been brave enough to speak out with science. So they call themselves NZDSOS, which is New Zealand Doctors. I'm so sorry. New Zealand Doctors Speaking Out with Science, NZDSOS. So these are all doctors who are unvaccinated. They're not just doctors as well. They're psychiatrists, psychologists, midwives, doctors, medical professionals who have refused to be vaccinated and who have joined this organization. They have a great website, it's worth looking at. They have got a research team and a writer team, and they put up, you know, the latest data and the latest discussion frequently. And so we've had about, I think, don't quote me on this number, but last time I spoke to a doctor, he told me there were about 30 doctors that were going through a process with the New Zealand Medical Council. And they were basically being censured for speaking out independently and questioning the narrative. So some of them managed to keep their medical license and their right to continue in medical practice by signing very comprehensive voluntary undertakings, which is like a legal gag document. And the voluntary undertaking they've signed prohibits them from expressing any COVID opinions contrary to those published by the New Zealand Ministry of Health and the New Zealand COVID-19 government page. So in other words, they're not allowed to express any concerns about safety or efficacy to either patients on private social media, personal pages, on business pages, nowhere. They can't stand with a microphone in a park. So fully gagged. And those that signed that undertaking have been allowed to stay in practice. And then there were a few doctors who refused to sign that, and they lost their medical license and they lost their practices and were unable to practice. So two of those, a New Zealand GP called Matt Shelton, who has had 30 plus years in general practice, and a New Zealand psychiatrist, well, he lives here, but I think originally, I think Peter is Peter Canaday. I think he's Canadian originally or American, but he lives here in New Zealand now. So both of them lost their right to practice here in New Zealand because of their questions. And they instigated a high court case. And just yesterday, we got the ruling from the high court that their punishment was out of proportion to their crimes, and they are having their medical licenses returned to them. So I haven't spoken yet to either of them. I literally just read a newspaper article about it yesterday. The newspaper article was quite confusing and was confused as to what this means for them moving forward. Do they still have to sign a voluntary undertaking even though they've got their medical license back? So there's more things to sort out there. But that's a precedent. We're thrilled because that is a precedent that our highest court in the land has ruled that their punishment did not fit their crime.
I mean, it's... It doesn't matter what I think, but I mean, it shouldn't be like this, but this is how it is. And still people are discussing that we live in a free world and you can do and say whatever you want.
So I have great respect for both of these men. They're amazing humans. They're very, very brave, courageous. They refuse to be silenced no matter what the cost to them. You know, it's a big cost. Matt's got a family. Yeah. He's got children at home and presumably he's got a mortgage. And, you know, he's had relationships with thousands of New Zealanders, you know, a professional relationship as a doctor. So the final straw for the medical council with Matt was that when vaccines were brought in for 12 plus in New Zealand, 12 to 16, I think it was, when they were rolled out, Matt sent a text message to all of his patients. He read me the text message. It was lovely. It was friendly. It was very, very balanced. It was not directive. He basically just said, you know, that now 12 to 16 year olds are eligible. And this is completely paraphrasing, so forgive me, Matt, if I don't get your words spot on. But the gist of it was that in all good faith, as their doctor, he was unable to advocate for the safety of the vaccine in children, then aged 12 to 16, that was the youngest band, because there was no long-term data. The trials were small with children and there was no long-term safety data. And so he basically let people know that he couldn't tell them in all good faith that it was safe for children, for pregnant women, and for fertile age women, because there was not the data to prove it. And that was what he did, and that it must be their choice, but he wants them, you know, to do their research and to know that. And that's what he lost his medical license for doing that.
For being brave and standing up for what he believed in.
And for speaking the truth. We don't have the long-term data. We don't know what happens to 12-year-olds 18 months from now. We've got no idea.
I mean, I'm Yeah, but the thing with he doing this is that other people might get the courage to do the same and stand up and speak your truth. I mean, yeah, as the situation is, I mean, he loses a lot, but
yeah,
he doesn't lose himself. I mean, he can see himself in the mirror and
that's why we all do it, right? Those of us who stand up, we stick our head above the, you know, the parapet, and boy, do we get our head shot off. I mean, there's a huge personal cost to speaking out in New Zealand. You know, censorship. We've all had newspaper articles written about us, calling us anti-vaxxers, tinfoil hatters, misinformation, purveyors of misinformation. You know, we've lost clients, we've lost family and friends, we've been in the media. When my Facebook group, the Health Forum, was taken down, within 6 hours of it coming down, troll groups called the Health Forum NZ had started on Facebook. And what the troll groups are doing, despite my best effort to let my people know that they're troll groups, they use the same banner that we had. They're called the Health Forum NZ. People think it's us back on Facebook. They join the group, and once they're there, the whole narrative of the group is pro-vaccine, anti-vaxxers are dying, we must exterminate anti-vaxxers from our society. So they land in this place thinking it's me, and they've landed in a troll group. So we've all got troll groups. The other huge freedom movement in New Zealand is called Voices for Freedom. They've got a troll page. They've got a troll website, as do NZ Doctors Speaking Out with Science. So a whole website set up to troll them. We've all experienced things like pathetic things, like people going on Google reviews. You know, they go on they Google review my services and give me 1-star reviews. People I've never seen, people have never come to me as an acupuncturist. And we've all been through that. You know, it's just like it's ongoing. But we all get to sleep well at night.
Yeah.
We all get to know, whatever the cost, I'm not changing my story because I'm speaking the truth. It's not made up. And so you get to choose, right? You get to choose. And I'm not saying none of us are superheroes. We're, you know, like, I'm a mother and a grandmother, and I've just had this kind of quiet life, you know, working as a health professional. I've never rocked the boat. I've always complied. And once you know the truth, and once you spend days and days going through the adverse reaction databases around the world, you can't unsee that stuff.
So, Linda.
I talk a lot. Sorry, Zoe.
No. I'm just
a question, and I'm like a runaway freight train.
Yeah, but it's fantastic. I mean, and I enjoy listening to you. And I mean, and we need to know what's going on. So it's not that. I just was thinking that because, I mean, we, mostly you, talked about, I mean, all the sad things. But I mean, is there a solution? I mean, get from here to a better place?
So in New Zealand, there's been a lot of learning for us. Living as an unvaccinated person, it's actually only been 4 months since we had our lives taken away with passports and mandates. It feels much, much, much longer than that. A lot of water under the bridge in 4 months. But what we've realized is that we don't need that stuff, that we've created like a parallel community. Voices for Freedom have been instrumental in this in New Zealand, and we've created a parallel community. So all of us in the freedom movement say things like, I've never had more loving, caring, wonderful friends in my life. Mm-hmm. As since we became the minority, like hunted animals chased into the corner, you know, when you're the minority and you're persecuted, you stand for each other. You link mm-hmm. arms. You're there for each other, you know, come hell or high water. Mm-hmm. So we have this beautiful community that's established throughout New Zealand of not just unvaccinated, but Voices for Freedom members, many unvaccinated, many pro-choice, right? Mm-hmm. So that's how we describe ourselves. We just say we are a pro-choice community. Whether you've had 16 jabs or zero, I love you, because it's not about, you know, how much mRNA is floating around your body. It's about who you are and what you stand for. So we have these beautiful parallel communities springing up with parallel sports organizations, food co-ops, bartering systems, a parallel health system. It's embryonic, it's beginning, but it's our way forward. Many people I know have sold their homes in suburbia. They've moved to far-flung rural, wildly rural parts of New Zealand. They've gone off grid. They've bought land. They're moving into tiny homes. They've bought land and they're moving multiple tiny homes on to create, you know, pro-choice, supportive, loving communities. Mm-hmm. So at a community level, there's a change in consciousness amongst the pro-choice people. So that's happening. Then on a more political level, there are moves afoot, some behind the scenes, some overt, to try and get more balanced representation into the mainstream governmental system, into the House, into Parliament. So we have an ex-National MP called Matt King, who last week announced he's formed a new party called the New Zealand Democracy Party, I think that's what it's called, or Democracy NZ. He was a National MP for 3 years. He was going to run for National again. And now, after everything that's happened, he's running as an independent party. He is going to get a huge amount of support behind him. I think we have a very real possibility of getting representation in the House with the next election from all of these disenfranchised people that want democratic rights, because New Zealand, our sovereign legislation is the Bill of Rights Act, which gives us all of our human rights and our rights as a democratic free citizen. And the COVID-19 legislation that was brought in basically subsumes that and negates many of the rights we had under the Bill of Rights. And we're very concerned, because the COVID legislation has just been reviewed and amended and brought in for another year with the option of it being perpetually moved forward, negating our Bill of Rights. So the Democracy Party is all about taking that on board. Is there a solution? I don't know that there's a solution. I think you know, we all, those of us who are aware and awake, are doing what we can do. We're creating a new life within the madness, where we're standing with open arms and hearts, compassionately welcoming triple vaccinated, quadruple vaccinated, anybody who sees the light and realizes something's not right. From where we stand, there's no "I told you so." It's just like, you know, well, certainly where I stand and where the health forum stands, I don't do the "I told you so." I do the "welcome, I'm so glad you're seeing the truth, you know, come join us and let's stand together for democratic rights, for freedom, for uncensored, for at the end of censorship, for media that is not paid by our government." Our government funds our media to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars. You know, I mean, we stand for all of those things. And vaccination status has nothing to do with it. Consciousness has everything to do with it.
Thank you so much. I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, it's like here in Sweden, at least, 11:30.
Oh, you must be so tired.
Yes, I actually am.
Oh, you're asleep.
It's okay. I mean, my heart is filled with joy for doing this, but also a lot of sadness. But I mean, there's over 100 people watching this.
Oh,
I mean,
it's
fantastic. And yeah, I mean, even if we don't know where we're heading in the future, I mean, I feel that at least I hope, but I also feel that it will be in some way good.
Things are coming from this.
Yeah,
I mean, the polarization and the growing awareness, you know, it calls you to dig deep and see what you stand for, what your values are. You know, where is your integrity? Where is your compassion? What do you stand for? And that's a good thing, because that only happens in times of pain and loss and pressure. The rest of the time, you're complacent. You know, humans are complacent and it's comfortable and you just kind of jog along. So this is also a spiritual awakening for a lot of people. People who had no faith, whatever the faith or the spirituality was, I'm not just talking about Christianity, whatever it is, your connection with your higher consciousness and higher power, however you conceptualize and feel that, dark times drive you back to that connection. You seek it. And that brings back an aspect of life to our modern existence that is missing for so many of us. You know, for our driving motivation, you're busy, 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 lack of connection, disconnected with people, materialistic, chasing money, bigger house, faster car. There's no place in there for contemplation, for kindness, for deepening of our soul and our spirit and our connection to higher power. So that's a good thing that's coming from this.
Yeah, that era is over, and
yes,
the one, yeah, and the one you're speaking about is,
it's just beginning.
Yeah,
and in Chinese medicine, you know, as an acupuncturist, you know, the yin yang symbol with the black, you know, the circle with the black and then the white. In Chinese medicine, they talk about yin and yang being two aspects of qi or life force that is in the heavens, the earth, nature, our body is manifest within us. But the reason that's a circle and the reason it's drawn like that is yin transmutes and changes into yang. And when yang becomes maximum, it transmutes back into yin. So nothing is fixed, nothing is finite and stable. There's flux, there's change, there's flow, there's growth all the time. And we've been pushed into the dark you know, the dark people that are waking up. It's a terrifying place to be. And I sometimes wake up some mornings and I say to my husband, oh, it's one of those days where I wish I knew nothing. I wish I could just wake up like some of my friends or were friends that don't want to know about any of this. And they just wake up and think, ah, awesome. Today I'm going to the cafe, then I'll go to the cinema. I'd like to go back to being that person and not knowing any of this, because it gives you, you know, ignorance is bliss until it's not. But in the process, ignorance is bliss. Whereas we wake up and you can't unknow what you know. It's with you constantly. And so we feel the dark. And we have to actually search out the light and move towards it, the kindness, the spirit, the connection, the generosity, you know, finding our higher selves and operating from that level. And we do it for, you know, like all the freedom, all the freedom front here in New Zealand, they all talk about they're doing it for their children and their grandchildren. Those of us who are older to have grandchildren. It's not for us. You know, I'm 60. I might be here another week or another 25 years. I don't know, right? None of us know. I'm not doing this for me, but I've got 7 grandchildren.
Yeah.
I care about those grandchildren. I don't want them to be living in a world where they're connected to the internet, where they're part of artificial intelligence, where there's only digital currency and they're tracked and their movements can be, you know, limited based on their social credit scores. I don't want any of that stuff for my grandchildren. That's why we do it. That's why you do what you're doing, I'm sure. You know, your skill and your way of being a part of this revolution is you're providing a platform for people from all corners of the world and all backgrounds and professions to you know, bring their wisdom to one place. So I'm grateful for that.
Me too and thank you so much, Linda, for doing this.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure. I'm sorry about the cranky voice and the ahumbo.
No.
I'm sure many of the people watching have also just had Omicron.
Oh, my God. I'm really tired.
So here in New Zealand, it's, I don't know what time it is, it's about 10:30 in the morning on a Saturday. I think tonight our clocks change and we're just transitioning into autumn, but it's still, I mean, look, I've got short sleeves on. It's still really, really warm. We're up in the 20s during the day. So we've had a beautiful summer.
Oh, it's
in spite of it all. Nature's been great.
I think we end here. And like I said, thank you. And thank you for all watching here. It's fantastic.
Thank you, Zoya, for the invitation. And thank you, viewers and listeners, for tuning up today. Much appreciated. And blessings to all of you around the world. Thank you, Zoya.
Thank you.